is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the CLNSmedia.com Boston Celtics post-game show. As always, sponsored by Greats.com, makers of the all-time greats, classic, stylish, comfortable sneakers, sold at a great price that even your host, Nick Sesento, that's me, and my co-host, Taylor McLeod, can afford.
What up?
Once again, I'm your host for tonight, Nick Sesento, and I'm joined by my co-host, Taylor McLeod. And we'll be breaking down all the action from tonight's 111-100 win by the Boston Celtics over the Milwaukee Bucks at home at TD Garden and taking all of your calls live on the air discussing this win. Once again, the Boston Celtics came into this game with a league-best 20-4 record. Tops in the league, not just in the Eastern Conference, but in the entire league, having won four of their previous five games since their historic 16-game win streak was broken a couple of weeks ago in Miami. The Celtics split their first two meetings with the Milwaukee Bucks this season, and this one being the tiebreaker, at least for now. They'll see the Bucks again in Milwaukee way ahead in April. But for now, the Celtics have split the tiebreaker, winning again once again tonight, 111-100, overcoming the red-hot MVP candidate Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, who way outscored his season average 29.4 points a game, scoring 4 points, grabbing 9 boards and 4 assists in a losing effort against the Boston Celtics, who were led by the two-headed monster of Kyrie Irving, who contributed 32 points, grabbed 4 rebounds, only 1 assist. But who needs Kyrie Irving to pass the ball when you have Al Horford giving you 20 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists? It's one of those crazy things about the Boston Celtics where sometimes our guards will lead the way in rebounding, and sometimes our center will lead the way in assists. But again, the Boston Celtics win tonight 111-100 behind solid play from almost all of the Boston Celtics. Everyone who played scored with the exception of Semi Ojeleye, who did not register a point but did have a couple of assists in his 13 minutes of playing time. Jaylen Brown, somewhat of a down game for him, caught a few fouls early in the first quarter. I believe 3 fouls within the first half of the first quarter and was sat for most of the game, but still contributed 8 points and 7 boards by the end of the night. Jason Tatum was on fire to start the game and to finish the game, although he didn't take as many shots in the second half as he did in the first, going 4-for-4 from 3-point in the first quarter alone, scored 17 points on the game, 6 rebounds. Boston Celtics shot 45.5% from 3, 55% from the field, in comparison to only 45% from the field for the Milwaukee Bucks. Free throws are about even. The Bucks had a slight advantage, 24 free throw attempts to the Celtics, 19. And the Boston Celtics astonishingly out-rebounded a team with so much length and so much size, and with the Greek freak out-rebounded their entire squad, 45-28. The Boston Celtics actually had, I thought that was the offensive rebounds. I'm looking at the box score, but I'm reading it wrong. And with that, since I made my first mistake once again, Boston Celtics win 111-100. I think I gave a pretty decent synopsis. Taylor McLeod, what did I leave out?
I don't know what you left out. I don't think anything. But I think I want to talk about how every single night this Celtics team comes at you from a different angle. You know, Jaylen Brown gets 3 fouls in the first 5 minutes of the game, and then all of a sudden Jason Tatum's 4-for-4 from three and killing it.
Oh, yeah.
And then he doesn't take a shot in the second half. And you've got Kyrie going for 32 and Al almost putting up a triple-double in that pick and roll between Marcus and Al just working down the stretch in the fourth quarter. This Celtics team comes at you from every single angle, you know, every single night, night in, night out. They're going to give you something different. They're going to pull out the win.
Absolutely. Fantastic win. This is another one of those wins. It's interesting because the Boston Celtics lost to the Milwaukee Bucks, second game of the season after that horrifying injury in the first game in the season opener against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Boston Celtics dropped that game and then dropped their next game to the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's understandable why the Celtics, you know, couldn't pull out those two games, even though both games were relatively close to my recollection. I remember the first game was a 1 or 2 point loss, even despite the tragedy. And then the next game against the Bucks and the Boston Celtics still hadn't found their groove. But after that loss to the Milwaukee Bucks way back at the beginning of the season, the Boston Celtics ripped off a 16-game winning streak, a historic 16-game winning streak, because no team in the history of the National Basketball Association had ever won that many games in a row after dropping their first two games of the season. So the Boston Celtics have fully redeemed themselves. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee a few weeks ago, and then Milwaukee returning the visit here to Boston and dropped the game again, 111-100 to the Boston Celtics, behind an all-around fantastic team effort, and of course led by Kyrie Irving's fantastic offensive output, but also the incredible playmaking by Al Horford. I think if anything you take away from this game, Al Horford almost messed around and got a triple-double. Extremely efficient, not just his 20 points, not just his 9 rebounds, not just his 8 assists, but the fact that he did it on 8 of 10 field goal shooting and 50% from behind the arc. So Al Horford, I don't think, with all the excitement from the young kids like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and of course the new addition Kyrie Irving, and a lot of the talk about Gordon Hayward being out in what if, and the stepping up at the wing position by Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I don't think Al Horford, who's been criticized in the past due to his large contract, maybe not being aggressive enough, he flinches at rebounds sometimes. I don't think Al Horford gets enough credit, and I think this game is one of those games where you just kind of have to look at that stat sheet and just say, wow, aren't we lucky to have Al Horford on this team, Taylor McLeod?
Yeah, we're absolutely lucky. Sunday after that Suns game, Bobby and I had quite a bit of time to, hash things out, and we turned it into Al Horford Appreciation Day, December 2nd, 2017, Al Horford Appreciation Day. And again, tonight it happens again. This guy, like, night in and night out, he gives you exactly what you want from him, or at least what I want from him. There's a bunch of people out there who want 20 and 20 every night because, oh, he's a max contract guy. He's got to perform like, prime Dwight Howard. No, he doesn't. He does exactly what the Celtics need, and the Celtics win because of it.
And, why I don't get this, the mentality. I mean, I know this is just an example, but prime Dwight Howard is a dinosaur in today's NBA. He can't shoot from, 10 feet away from the basket. He can't hit his free throws. He doesn't spread the floor. Even when he was in his prime, yes, he was, a dominant post player, but he was really the last of the dominant post players. And as much as, not to go on a tangent about Dwight Howard, although there were a lot of Boston Celtics fans that really wanted Dwight Howard in green at certain points in the past. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but there were times,
give me credit. God, Dwight Howard was drafted in 2004. I'm 19. I'm not that young.
There you go. Let us know. You're 19 years old. You're mature for your age. You remember, you've been following basketball. But I'm sure you remember some of the online, wishful thinking. And I don't think I wouldn't call it wishful thinking because I was never a big fan of Dwight Howard to begin with. But a lot of fans that were salivating at the mouth of the possibility of a Rajon Rondo, Dwight Howard kind of combination. But I think this manifestation of the Boston Celtics, that was the old school style. That, a big center with a passing point guard, that's old school basketball in today's modern NBA. The NBA has changed so much in just a couple of years that I don't think you could put together a better roster than the Boston Celtics have right now, with a better coach, to be sure. For this modern NBA and the way the NBA is positionless now, with versatile players that can play multiple positions, that can, rotate out on multiple players and defend multiple positions on defense, or all at the same time while spreading the floor and shooting the three, it's just incredible what this Boston Celtics team has done. And here tonight there was visiting TD Garden, you know, one of the top contenders, one of the top, you know, nominees, one of the top names, hot, red-hot names mentioned in the MVP category, getting even more MVP hype than the best player on the best team in the NBA, Kyrie Irving, Giannis Antetokounmpo, getting all this hype, puts up 40 points, 9 rebounds, you know, a stellar game, a game that any NBA player would be envious to have, and the Boston Celtics took his best shot, took his best, you know, his best punch, the Milwaukee Bucks' best shot, and the game was never in doubt. The Bucks brought the game kind of close. The third quarter was theirs. They outscored the Boston Celtics. That was the only quarter they outscored the Celtics, was the third, and brought the game kind of close, but, I mean, even with Giannis's 40-point game, even with, you know, 19 from Middleton, even with 18 from Bledsoe, who was a fantastic pickup, by the way, very nice pickup for the Bucks. I thought he would make a much bigger difference for the Bucks than he has, but let him, you know, get accustomed. You know, even with all of those factors, the Boston Celtics just slid through this game, you know, easy peasy. You know, I hate that expression, but I mean, there's no other way to describe it other than the Boston Celtics just kind of rode right through this one. No, you know, the game was never really in doubt. You know, held the lead for almost the entire game and, you know, pulled this one out. Now the Celtics have their 21st win of the season, league best 21-4. With the Cleveland Cavaliers getting hot and riding their heels, the Boston Celtics are going to have to continue playing that way. But, you know, when you can take what the preseason had hyped up to be one of the better teams in a weak Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks, even though their record doesn't quite, you know, show how, you know, good they could be or how much talent they have on their roster at 12-10. I mean, to take a team like the Milwaukee Bucks and basically make, you know, short work of them like the Boston Celtics did tonight, very impressive, very, very impressive win.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the first game they played in Milwaukee – game number two of the season, they're on the, you know, at the back-to-back the night before Gordon Hayward broke his ankle. So, you know, they're still shaken up about that. But then, you know, a couple weeks later, actually, I think the next week, they go to Milwaukee on a Thursday night, beat them by 9. Al Horford and Kyrie dominate down the stretch. You know, they great performance. And then tonight, like you said, the game never felt like it was in jeopardy. There were some points where, because they got out to such a big lead in the first quarter, you know, the Bucks would cut it to 8 or 9. You're like, you know, like it feels a little bit dicey, but in reality, the Celtics had this one mostly all night. And the thing they did best, or at least what I think they did best, is, you know, you don't want to give Giannis 40 points, but if you give Giannis 40, and then, like you said, you give Middleton 19, Bledsoe 18, you give those guys whatever they want. Not whatever they want, but, you know, enough. But then you, Tony Snell, 11 points, Malcolm Brogdon, 10 points, Jason Terry had 2 points, and after that, no one scored. So, you know, you let those top three guys give what they want, and then you shut down everyone else, and they don't have the firepower outside of those top three to, you know, outscore the Celtics.
Exactly. I think you just brought up a fantastic point that this was very much a game of benches, because you got what you would expect from the Milwaukee Bucks starters. You got the 40 points from Giannis. You got the, as we mentioned, the 19 points from Middleton, the 18 points from Bledsoe, and I mean, you know, these are solid players. Four of the Milwaukee Bucks starting five scored in double figures. Snell had 11 points and shot 3 for 4 from deep. And then Brogdon off the bench, 32 minutes. I guess he would be kind of the, you know, equivalent of not necessarily in the style of play, but in terms of minutes and playing alongside the starting five. Brogdon, similar to Marcus Smart, you know, 32 minutes in this game, but scoring 10 points. That makes 5 Bucks with double figure scoring. But, you know, other than Brogdon and other than Jason Terry's 2 points, as you mentioned, nobody on the Bucks bench scored. I was a big fan of Thon Maker. I used to teach some prep students that actually played some AAU games against Thon Maker, and they put me on to Thon Maker long before Thon Maker was, you know, a thought in the public eye, and I kind of, you know, watched a lot of his highlights and was very impressed at the ability of the 7-foot kid, you know, his ability to handle the ball, his ability to bring the ball up court, his handles, his shot, he can shoot from outside. But, you know, to put up 0 points, you know, I believe this is his second year now in the league. He was drafted same draft with Jaylen Brown. You know, just not really giving them much of anything. He's a player that I think Brad Stevens would really get a whole lot of, you know, good out of. But, you know, like you mentioned, only 12 points from the Milwaukee bench from those two players, Brogdon and Terry, whereas if you look at the Boston Celtics bench, every single player except for Semi Ojeleye scored a basket. Seven from Terry Rozier, who has been coming on having increasingly impressive performances. Only 7 points tonight, but four rebounds is fantastic, you know, to go with an assist. Scoring efficiently, 3 for 5 from the field, 1 for 2 from downtown. Of course, Marcus Smart led the bench with 8 points, and, you know, what one of our longtime callers, Isaiah, refers to as the Spackle Man, the guy who does a little bit of everything. The Spackle Man, exactly. The guy who does a little bit of everything. Marcus Smart with his 8 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, a steal. Wouldn't mind seeing those 4 turnovers, you know, reduced a little bit, but that's just part of Marcus Smart's game. You take the good with the bad, and, you know, for every,
right,
you know, bonehead play, he makes a couple of, you know, outstanding, you know, how did he do that plays. One guy I just really want to mention that doesn't get brought up enough on this show, and I'm not talking about Marcus Morris, who's great, you know, in certain occasions and in certain circumstances, not necessarily tonight, with his 1 for 6 field goals and 3 points, field goal shooting for 3 points, but Daniel Tice, baby, Vanilla Tice, with his 6 points and only a block, although there was a couple of, as usual with rookies, a couple of shots that looked like clean blocks, but they weren't counted as blocks and were counted as fouls because, you know, the rookies
right,
just can't get no love from the NBA. But 6 points, a rebound, and a block, 3 for 4 shooting in 10 minutes off the bench. I mean, you can't ask for more from a guy that nobody heard of before, unless you're a fan of EuroLeague basketball, that nobody heard of until Danny Ainge, you know, signed him as a free agent over the offseason and brought him in as a rookie. I mean, Daniel Tice looks like he's going to have, you know, a solid career here with Boston as a role player. What do you think about Tice and the rest of the bench players, how well they performed tonight?
I think the rest of the bench played pretty well. I don't think anyone, you know, did anything outstanding. I like Marcus Smart running that pick and roll with Al down the stretch. Like I said earlier, I think they had 3 or 4 alley-oops in like a span of 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. That was real nice. Terry, I think Terry's been, he's like kind of cool off. He had a hot start to the season. He's been playing all right. You got Morris and, you know, Semi. But Daniel Tice is perfect for today's NBA. He's a rim runner. He can shoot a little bit. He'll pull a bunch of boards. He'll fight hard on defense. And like I said, he'll get out and run. And I was talking to with Bobby a couple days ago about it. I don't know how this guy is in a San Antonio Spur. Like, it doesn't make much sense how Pop didn't snatch him up, but I'm sure glad he didn't.
Because Pop is one of those coaches that if there's anybody in the league that can, you know, pick out those diamonds in the rough overseas, it's
exactly.
is Greg Popovich. I mean, I think, you know, he just every single year he seems to bring in another one that, you know, another one in my DJ Khaled voice. He seems to bring another one, you know, from overseas, and they just contributes and they just knows how to, you know, play his role. And it's not that Daniel Tice needs, you know, a whole ton, you know, a whole boatload of minutes. He's not really taking minutes away from, you know, anybody. He's just taking the minutes that he has, and he is extremely efficient with those minutes. I don't have the basketball reference open right now at the moment, at least not to Daniel Tice's page, but I know that looking at his stats, especially when you have a player that plays so few minutes, I believe he plays somewhere between, you know, 10 and 12 minutes per game. When you look at a player that only plays so many minutes a game, you kind of got to look at his expanded stats, his advanced stats, his either per 36 stats or per 100 possession stats to really get an idea of his impact on the game. And when you look at Daniel Tice's expanded stats, those per 36 minute, you know, stats, he's one of the top, one of the most productive players on this Boston Celtics roster. I mean, his contributions have been incredible to the Celtics. Let's see, I have his stats open now. Per 36 minutes, he's averaging almost 13 points and just a shade under 12 rebounds per 36 minutes, in addition to 2.5 blocks and just over 1 steal and 1 assist. I mean, those are fantastic numbers for a guy that plays. Where's his minutes per game? I don't have his minutes per game in front of me. For a guy that
it's
plays
around 12. It's around 12.
Yeah, 12.4 minutes per game, just to be exact. And when you get someone that can give you that type of production in such, you know, in such short minutes, I mean, you can't ask for anything more. And like you said, he would be a fantastic player in the San Antonio Spurs system, but I think he makes an even better player in Green. I think Green just suits him right. And again, Brad Stevens knows how to get his players in the right position to score and maximize their output. So fantastic effort from all of these players. And again, you know, 6 points and a rebound doesn't jump out at you, but when you see that it's 3 for 4 field goals in only 10 minutes, I mean, that's just efficiency. He epitomizes
right.
Efficiency.
Exactly. And one of our listeners, who I know is waiting on the call-ins right now, Vinny or Sailboat Studios, just tweeted at me, said, Tice shoots 70.3% from between 0 and 3 feet around the rim. So when he's around the rim, he rarely misses.
And that's part of that that efficiency.
Exactly.
And since you mentioned Vinny and Saugus, how about we bring Vinny in? He's on the greats.com call lines. If you want to call into the show like Vinny and Saugus has just done, you dial 347-215-7771, and we'll take your call live on the air. Just press 1 once you've dialed the number and you hear the automated host pick up your call. Just press 1 so that we know that you want to get on the air, just like Vinny and Saugus did. Vinny, speak of the devil. Taylor McLeod just brought you up, and here you are. What's up? What did you think about the game tonight, Vinny?
Yeah, I thought if I harassed his Twitter account long enough, he'd let me go.
Well,
on.
Yeah, I mean, it took you long enough to follow
kidding.
Me back. I followed you and unfollowed you 3 times now, so.
What? You did? Oh, jeez, I'm sorry, man.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
You called in talking
I'm
to
not
you,
like,
Bobby. I hit you with the follow right after. No love.
Hey, my bad. Well, hey, no, I just got that notification that you followed me, and I followed you back, good sir.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's
guess,
this time. I've done it twice before. Don't. We're all right. We'll get past it. We'll get past it.
I didn't know. Well, listen.
I got
you. Could be a stalker.
You.
How the hell? How you could be a stalker? You could be a criminal. Why do I have to be? You could.
Hey,
you can't trust
safety
everybody
first.
On the internet.
Safety first.
You know.
I appreciate it.
Doing good on my part here. Got home. Someone deleted my Blades of Glory recording, so I'm not in a good mood tonight. Even though the Celtics won, you know, I wanted to watch Will Ferrell and the underrated comedy the point is, I think Jenna Fisher's a very funny lady. I'm surprised she doesn't have a seem to get a career after The Office. She's a very funny lady, but the Celtics, what bothers me about that game was, I didn't catch a lot of it, but the Celtics were murdering the Bucks on backdoor cuts. And I think that had a lot to do with Jason Kidd's inability to combat that. Daniel Theis, Jaylen Brown, Horford were getting dimed by Marcus Smart, and it seemed effortless. Marcus Smart looked like the second coming of John Stockton tonight, and I've watched Marcus Smart play for 3.5 years now. He's not bad, and he's certainly not a bad passer, but he ain't John Stockton. He doesn't make those quick zip passes like that. That it was crazy how he couldn't like stop that. And on Nate Duncan's Twitter account, he said that the Milwaukee Bucks bench was screaming weak side whenever Smart got the ball, saying push him to his left, his weak side, but they never did it. They couldn't do it. And I'm just flabbergasted that happened. I don't know. Oh, I'll let What do you guys think there? Like, there's some problems with this Bucks team when it comes to their coaching. It's a good win, though. I'm happy they won.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I've seen a lot of talk about Jason Kidd being on the hot seat. You know, they're just not getting what they need to get out of a team with so much talent. I think they do lack some shooting. Only Middleton, Brogdon are good shooters, and Tony Snell's a good shooter. But outside of those three, they don't have a whole lot of shooting. So in a game like tonight, when the Celtics muck things up and they can't really, you know, get to the basket, they struggle. But what you said about Marcus is interesting. You know, they kept saying weak side, push him to his left. And he did go to his left a couple of times, but every time he went left, he'd throw an alley-oop up to Al Horford. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Yeah.
So
it worked
out well.
That's true. Yeah. Maybe you got me there. But I was kind of like, I had to catch up on this game. Just got in. I watched the middle of the third quarter and the fourth. You know, I'll be back watching the Celtics all day, like all the way through. You know, come next time. I just had a hectic week, but very beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Well, but let's see. There was another thing that bothered me about the Bucks was Eric Bledsoe looks very comfortable in Milwaukee, but he only took 8 shots in the second half. He was 5 of 8. In the third quarter, I was thinking he's going to duel with Kyrie. Giannis and Bledsoe are ready to go, and we got Kyrie. Somebody else better step up on the Celtics because this is going to be a fire match. And then they didn't drop any plays for Eric Bledsoe. It was crazy. I understand they have Giannis, but you got to do something for your second best guy. He's really good, and they didn't give him any shots. I'm surprised. Were you surprised at that? I was expecting Bledsoe to take over a little bit for Giannis because I think Giannis was wearing down a little bit. Like, you know, but it was just him again. You know, there's some nice players on this team, but it was just him again doing everything.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot with this team. You know, they made Giannis a point guard last year, maybe the year before, and he's so good. He's an MVP candidate. He gets to get to the basket whenever he wants, so I think he gets really ball dominant sometimes. And he's a good passer, but I think sometimes he gets tunnel vision on the rim, which is to be expected by a 22-year-old. And you don't necessarily get Bledsoe involved as much, but at the same time, I think Bledsoe's been there for less than 10 games, so it's all adjustments that they'll have to make over time.
Yeah, I guess. But it's maddening that one of the greatest point guards this game has ever seen can't integrate a point guard like Eric Bledsoe into his system. And I don't even know what the heck that system is. Point guard Giannis, though, is pretty awesome. That was a pretty smart move on his part, so I'll give him that.
Yeah.
I never thought that was going to happen. But then again, like, I'm in Boston. I didn't live, eat, and breathe Giannis for years. So if I was in Milwaukee, I probably would have been talking about point guard Giannis since 2013 or something. But excuse me. Let's see.
Well, Vince, if you look at Eric Bledsoe's stats, he's averaging 16.9, almost 17 points a game, and 5 assists. And I
nice.
Think if you look at the box score tonight, I mean, he didn't underperform compared to his typical stats. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had 18 points and 3 assists. I mean, that's what you would expect from him based on his, you know, statistical performance thus far in the season. You know, and those are his Milwaukee stats, not his total season stats combined with Phoenix. So, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. I just don't know if Eric Bledsoe is that kind of guy that's going to, you know, pick up, you know, the main scoring load for a guy in the clutch when the team needs a bucket and the main star is gassed. I mean, I just don't know if Eric Bledsoe is that guy. I admittedly haven't followed his career all that closely, more so just through, you know, box scores and highlights, because I'm just not a, you know, Phoenix Sun, you know, type of guy. But I think you got what you're going to get from, you know, from Eric Bledsoe. He did what he was going to do. That just wasn't enough. I think the biggest issue was the bench, as Taylor mentioned earlier and we discussed earlier, just not enough production from the bench. You have to get something mm-hmm. from Thon Maker. You have to get more than, I mean, it's a tough call
yeah.
to get more than 2 points from Jason Terry. But, I mean, you can't have zero from Thon Maker. That just doesn't happen. You can't win like that. And you can't have zero from, you know, Henson on 0-for-6 field goals. If you're going to not score a bucket, you can't go 0-for-6. If you're not going to not score a point, you can't go 0-for-4 like Thon Maker did. It's just those are, you know, those 10 buckets that they missed combined, those are the situations that take away points from, you know, opportunities from the rest of the team. And I say the same thing about Marcus Smart when he mm-hmm. goes, you know, 3-for-15. It's not that Marcus Smart isn't a good player in and of itself, and it's not that his bad shooting excludes him from being a great player, but when he's shooting 15 shots, and then you look at the box score, and Al Horford only has, you know, five shot attempts, you know, at some point you got to say, well, those 15, you know, a couple of those 15 shot attempts from Marcus Smart should have gone to somebody like Al Horford. And I think you could say that tonight, that, you know, Henson going 0-for-6, maybe, you know, he should have gone 0-for-3 and let, you know, 3 more of those shot attempts go to Eric Bledsoe, who shot 6-for-9. I mean, he shot almost 70% from the field, 67% from the field. I mean, he was on fire, and he shot 50% from 3. Give up some of those attempts and give them to Eric Bledsoe, give them to Chris Middleton, give them to somebody else who might make a shot.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's how it can work, and I don't mean it like in a patronizing way when I said that. I just mean, like, you know, McCurr is a I think he can develop a three-point game. He's just a kid, and eventually he'll develop it. And I think they're just going to let him test out the waters. But I think, like, what's more agonizing to watch with that bench is in Milwaukee is not just watching DeAndre Liggins play. It's watching Jason Terry be trotted out. And I like Jason Terry. I love him. But you don't put Jason Terry out. I believe he put him out late parts of the third or at a crucial part in the fourth when the game was – when the Bucks looked like that they were going to make a run and they put – and he put Jason Terry in.
Yeah.
I was like, don't do that. I love Jason Terry. Don't do that. Don't bring him in. You know, he's too old. He's play him in the first quarter, the second quarter, early parts of the fourth even, but not in a crucial stretch like that. That arguably lost them the game. And it was, and I get it, it's December, but you know, like you don't give burn like that to 38-year-old guys in those moments. And Bledsoe, admittedly, I didn't follow much of his career either. I watch a lot. I listen to a lot of Nate Duncan and Zach Lowe. I read his articles on B-ball breakdown. I try to get as much info on these characters as I can. From Boston, it's the first year I got league pass. But Bledsoe, from what I've heard, is like and seen so far, he's 75% Kyrie minus the jump shot, but he has defense. Like, Bledsoe can defend, and he can get to the rim. He can make the mid-range every now and then, but he's not the shooter that Kyrie is. So he can be an offensive force. And I felt like today this was the night he could go for that 25, 28 points as opposed to the standard 18 and 5. And I know he had 18 and 3 tonight, but I felt like he was going to exceed his averages since coming to Milwaukee. It's still a fantastic trade, and I think that helped them a lot. But I guess the Bucks, they still have a trade to make because they're still using Jason Terry and DeAndre Liggins, and they just have these holes. But that's actually like an interesting subject because I kind of wanted to talk to you about teams that have a trade to make. And we always talk about like the big trades, you know, Boogie somehow landing in Washington without giving up Beal. What about like a 3-and-D guy like Damari Carroll or something who's having like a renaissance season in Brooklyn? Like he just had a 13-8. And 3 tonight, he was pretty good against, I know it's the Hawks, but, you know, he looked spry and ready to go. He's better than Markieff Morris.
Markieff. But Vince, the thing about Damari Carroll is not who he was playing. He had a game against, you know, he had a decent game tonight against a terrible team, the Atlanta Hawks. But it's who he's playing for. This renaissance season that he's having, which, I mean, he's been in the league for I don't know how many years. I'm looking at his stat sheet. He's played for several teams and been in the league since 2009. And this is his best output so far this season. He's averaging a career high in scoring, I believe career high in rebounding, 14 points and 7 rebounds. It's not so much the teams that he's playing. It's the fact that he's playing for such a terrible team that somebody has to score those points. Somebody has to grab those rebounds for the Brooklyn Nets. And Damari is just that guy that's going to do it. Does that necessarily mean that if you plugged him into a team like the Bucks or like the Boston Celtics that he would do the same thing? I don't know. I don't think there's room for him on the Celtics because there's just not another wing. But for the Bucks, I think he'd be a nice player for the Bucks. But
yeah, until the playoffs when LeBron eats his lunch again.
Exactly, but I think the biggest issue.
LeBron eats everyone's lunch, okay?
He loves whatever Damari Carroll brings every single day.
Yes, he rips right into that brown bag and just, you know, dumps everything out on the floor and just inhales it. He chops it all up into a line and just snorts it all himself because he just loves that lunch so much. But if you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, and I'm gonna go back to this one more time, and then I'm gonna throw it back to Taylor real quick. If you look at the Milwaukee Bucks bench, Thon Maker. I don't even know what was it. Malcolm Brogdon, DeAndre Liggins, Jason Terry, and then the do not plays, DMPs, DJ Wilson, Joel Bolomboy, Gary Payton Jr., Rashad Vaughn, who didn't. There's nobody on that bench. Who on that bench is going to score? And as nice of a player as Damari Carroll may be, I just don't know if he's enough to get the Milwaukee Bucks, even in his week to the Eastern Conference, I don't think Damari Carroll is enough to make the Bucks that great either.
I think the East is good this year, though.
I don't know if it's good, but I think the West is worse than people thought it was going to be, and I think the East is better. So I think it's all kind of evened out.
The West is like top heavy. Like Pelicans have DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, two of the top 15 players, maybe even 10 players in the NBA, and they're struggling to get a playoff spot. It's just because the Rockets and the Warriors are awesome, and the Thunder are like 8-13. And mm-hmm. I swear I am not on the trade Paul George bandwagon. I think they have tremendous bad luck in close games. Maybe some tweaks here and there need to be made, but I'm 100% sure they're fine. But back to like Carroll, like, you know, I think Spencer Dinwiddie and Alan Crabb and Joe Harris are the guys who provide the scoring. I think Carroll does more of the nooks and cranny stuff. And he's kind of like the glue that holds that team together, sort of like a very, very, very poor man's Horford. I understand. Well, somebody's got to get those points, but I think they're 8-14, 9-14. I didn't expect them to have 9 wins going into this season. I think they're on pace for 33 wins.
Yeah, I mean, they've been missing their best player for 29. Quite some time now.
Yeah, and they're really well coached, and they're playing a very fast-paced system. They're first in the league in pace. So if you have injury concerns with Carroll, he seems to be holding up pretty nicely the way Atkinson is using him in this super fast-paced system. So Carroll for the Bucks, but I would really like Carroll on the Wizards, to be honest with you. If they can flip Markieff Morris and something else and a pick for Damari Carroll, I'd kind of be afraid of the Wizards a little more because you're trotting out friggin' Wall, Beal, Porter, Oubre, and you can probably have Carroll. And it's like, well, who's your center? And it's like, I really don't know. I think it's probably good they don't trot out Gortat and Mahimi because I think Horford and Kyrie are just going to kill him on the pick and roll. So, like, if they go – that's, like, with an uber small ball lineup like that kind of would scare me a little bit. Because Markieff Morris is pretty bad this year. I'm not afraid of the Wizards. And I'm not afraid of any of these teams. And that's not Celtics pride talking. It's just, like, the Pistons, we had a conversation for 10 seconds about, man, they're for real. They just beat the Warriors. And then they drop a game to the friggin' Wizards without John Wall. And it's like, okay, I guess we need to calm the heck down.
Celtics, though. They beat the Celtics. That's pretty. They've beaten the two best teams in the league. I mean, you have to give them some credit. Their record, you know, speaks for itself. Are they going to be there at the end of the season? Are they going to be Eastern Conference contenders? I think they're going to level out a little bit. I think they're on a hot streak. Now they're going to level out.
And it's
the Celtics and Cavaliers on the crash course. But you can't deny what the Pistons are doing. They've made, you know, upgrades. I think that, you know, Avery Bradley is an upgrade.
Yeah.
As much as I like Marcus Morris, he's just not as consistent and is not as good of a two-way player as Avery Bradley. I think that goes without saying. But they've made upgrades. Andre Drummond is playing really well, even though I think he just, as I mentioned earlier about Dwight Howard – Andre Drummond is a dinosaur in the sense that, you know, he would be perfect as, you know, a 1999 or 2000 type, you know, center, you know, the guy that you can base. But that's just not the way the NBA plays anymore.
No,
but you know,
Drummond's revolutionizing himself, though. He's young and he can rim run. And now he's shooting pretty well from the line, so he's not a liability, and he's going to pull a bunch of boards. So he is working on it, and he's improved a lot. I just don't want any Andre Drummond slander.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're Andre Drummond guy?
I'm not a huge Andre Drummond guy, but I think that he's put in the work and deserves to be recognized for it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think that, yeah, well, Drummond's pretty good. I feel bad I was out on him earlier. I'm happy he's turned it around a little bit, and he's shooting well from the line. I just wish one of these big men who have trouble shooting at the line would just take a class with Rick Barry. I know Rick Barry's a jerk and all, but I just want someone to shoot underhanded for once.
But it's a rock who does it.
Yeah. I think what Stan Van Gundy, when he went to Detroit, he had an idea of what to make that Pistons team. It was, okay, I got to the finals with a game-changing center in Dwight Howard, and I surrounded him with shooters, Hito, Jameer, Rashard Lewis, and we just got hot at the right time. And you know what? That's what I'm going to do here in Detroit. And this is kind of the best iteration of that. You know, Reggie Jackson is not the best point guard out there, but he's nice. He's going to kill you one day, but he's okay. Avery Bradley is very calming, is a very calming presence. You know what you're getting. Tobias Harris took a gigantic step forward, and I love Tobias. I was happy. I was surprised he went for Ilyasova, Brandon Jennings, and a pick I don't think conveyed yet from Orlando. And Drummond took a step forward. You know, this is the best iteration of Stan Van's 2009 Magic since the 2010 Magic with Vince Carter. You know, like that, this is the best iteration of that team. And I don't know, like I was really excited for when they were going to play the Cavs a week or two ago, and I recorded the game, and I had to go out with friends, you know, because I have to have a social life, you know, that dumb stuff. But, you know, I'm excited to come home and watch it, and I see on my phone, oh, the Cavs curb stomped them.
Yep.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, my guy LeBron put 17 on him in the first quarter.
Yep. I can't have fun. LeBron doesn't let me have fun. Okay, LeBron, never mind. I know you're the best. I just wanted to see Detroit, but okay. All right, Detroit is just a very nice team, and they're going to get to the second round, and they're going to lose to either the Cavs, and I'm not too afraid of them. I don't think it'll be an easy win. Drummond terrorized us on the board, but I think we can play Baines a little more. I think we can Drummond off the paint. I think Morris can limit Tobias somewhat, and I think Kyrie is going to really hurt Reggie Jackson on the defensive end. And I think Brad Stevens is a more flexible coach than Stan Van. I think Stan Van is a little rigid, and I like Van Gundy a lot. But it's just that's who they are. Maybe they'll win 50 games, surprise people, but they're not title contenders. If Washington could get their friggin' heads on right, they'd be top four right now in the Eastern Conference, as opposed to, like, I really hate Washington because they talk a bunch of smack and they don't do nothing. I hate them so much. Yeah, I hate them.
Yeah, I feel that.
I hate them with all my heart. And I like John Wall, and I like Bradley Beal, but I hate them because heck are you talking that? The Cavs are dodging us. No, they're not. No, they're not.
Yeah.
You couldn't beat a point guard with a bad hip. You got beat by Kelly Olynyk in a game 7. Please stop.
Exactly.
Please stop. Yeah.
No love lost for the Washington Wizards. No, I thought they were an interesting team. I liked the building, the budding rivalry that we as fans saw coming throughout last season. I mean, it wasn't like it just you know, shot up out of nowhere in the playoffs. I mean, these two teams were, you know, were growing a rivalry with each other. We're growing, you know, a disdain for each other before that playoff series even, you know, rolled around. And once it rolled around and, you know, all the circumstances surrounding it, everything that was going on, I mean, it really got contentious.
The
and
games,
they
yeah.
still couldn't put, you know, the Boston Celtics, you know, couldn't put the Boston Celtics away. They had plenty of chances, couldn't put them away. The guy that really just, there's always somebody on every single team that you see their face, you see their haircut, you see their jersey, whatever it is, and they just infuriate you. And for me, that guy is Kelly Oubre. I don't even know if he's still with the Washington Wizards, but just can't
yeah,
stand
he's
that.
Good. He's good. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm sure he's a decent player. I mean, it makes no sense in hating a player that, you know what I'm saying, is garbage anyway.
Yeah, no,
and unless
all.
He's one of those players like, well, I mean, I guess you can't say Zsa Zsa Pachulia is garbage because he's a champion, I believe, and he does his thing. He's a utility guy that, you know, does his job. But I mean, every time I see Zsa Zsa Pachulia, I just want to punch my television screen because he's just one of those guys that, you know, just gets under your skin. Joakim Noah in his prime, guy that I absolutely couldn't stand. Even way back when he played for the Florida Gators, living down here in Florida. I remember when they won their back to back championship alongside our man Al Horford, who was the real talent on that team, I should say. Absolutely, he got those things with Florida. But Joakim Noah walking around Gainesville, the Gainesville campus, in you know, basically a muumuu or whatever that was, a towel, a blue tarp or something, and you know, dancing with towels on his head after winning, you know, the SEC championship or whatever, you know, tournament game that he had won. The guy just is repulsive, and you know, there's just some Kelly Oubre is just one of those guys for different reasons. There's one of those guys that I just don't like. And if he were complete garbage and contributed nothing, there'd be no reason to dislike him. But you know, it is what it is. I don't like. I think the Wizards are overblown. They have all that talent. They have, you know, the discussion last year of John Wall potentially being a MVP type candidate just off his performance in the playoffs and his performance versus the Celtics. He was suddenly jettisoned up there as, you know, a top 3 point guard in the league, and I don't think that he's a top 3 or top even 5 point guard in the league, in my opinion. I just don't see it. He's talented, interesting, but if we can go through the top 5 point guards in the league, I know there's some callers on the line that would like to go through that, but I mean, let's see, you got Steph Curry has to be one, or not one as in one, top of the list, but he's one of them.
Okay. He's one.
James Harden, I think. Kyrie Irving has got to be up there. I mean, I wouldn't put John Wall in the top 3. Top 5 even would be straight. Russell Westbrook. I mean, how many guys out there, you know, that you could easily put ahead of John Wall? I just don't see John Wall. But I mean, he's a nice 1B category type guy, but I don't think he's a 1A category type guy. I just don't see it.
I could have sworn I thought you said East, and I was about to panic. Like, are we really gonna put D'Angelo Russell over him? Like, I like D'Angelo, but come on. Like, but I think my rankings would go Steph, Harden. Let's see here. I would go Steph, Harden, Russ, Clay, and no, not Clay, Kyrie, and then Clay. That's off the top of my head. Like, I love Clay Thompson.
Clay is a point guard.
I think he's
a shooting guard, though.
Oh, point guard. Sit. I thought you said guards. Fuck
no.
Sorry.
If we're talking about guards in general, John Wall probably you might not even put him in the top 10 in the league. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I like John Wall, but, I mean, anyways, the call lines are actually starting to blow up late for some reason. I see a couple of familiar callers. So, Vince, give us your last takes before we let you go. We always like to have you calling in, so we're going to give you your final say here before we get to the other callers. What's up? Give us something to hang our hats on as we let you go.
All right. Well, there's a lot of people talking about how the Celtics have issues scoring on the second unit. So here, and I know we talked ad nauseum about Marcus Smart to the point where I really don't want to go into it again. It's kind of hard to go into how he can't shoot for the 400th time. But what if we traded him for the expiring contract of Tyreke Evans, who's having a very similar year to Jeff Hornacek's 1991-92 season when he was an all-star. If you look up those two seasons, this Tyreke Evans season and the Jeff Hornacek 91-92 all-star season, it's the same stat line kind of, except Hornacek's a better suitor. Evans had a couple bad games, but I kind of like this kid, and I kind of want to get him. I don't want to trade Marcus Smart for him, but I kind of think he would help our bench.
I don't.
I catch this pot.
Yes, I think
that
Tyreek Evans is averaging 18 points, 5 boards, and 4 assists. I would gladly, any day, pick up the phone, Danny Age, and make it happen. Trade Marcus Smart for Tyreek Evans right now because he would be a fantastic contributor. I don't know if that's just because, you know, because he didn't score that many points, nearly that many points last season, but he's sure getting it done this year. I mean, he scored 20 points in his rookie year. 18 points now. I mean, he's having basically his best season since his, you know, first couple of years in the league. I would love to have Tyreek Evans on the bench instead of Marcus Smart. But, you know, I'm sure that there are other callers on the line, like
yeah.
Isaiah. I see you waiting,
I'll
Isaiah.
See you guys
they would
later.
they would argue that point. So anything else, Vinny, before we let you go? Vinny and Saugus.
Well, I know I heard of Isaiah before. If he brings up Isaiah Thomas, I want you guys to understand that Isaiah Thomas was one of the best. Had a really good run up this time last year, where he was like the top 3 point guard in the league. And here's my big swing. I think Isaiah had a better year than Russell Westbrook. So last year, triple doubles aside. So that's it. And Isaiah was so freaking efficient, and he had a worse situation in the when it came to the players around him last year, because Victor Oladipo is not garbage. Sabonis isn't garbage, as evidence of what they're doing in Indiana. Steven Adams ain't garbage. Jeremy Grant ain't garbage. They're good players. And Russell Westbrook does not make your teammates better. That's why I wanted to give it to James Harden or Kawhi Leonard. And Russell Westbrook, that triple-double season got OKC, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony and saved their franchise. That's why the triple-double season is important. It's not important because of Oscar Robertson or whatever. Isaiah Thomas was a Herculean, and I love him so much. And the nickname, there's a wrestling nickname generator, and every time I typed it in, it came up Napalm Hercules. But I really wish that nickname would catch on. All right, well, I'll leave you guys alone.
Napalm
yeah,
Hercules.
Napalm Hercules.
Vinny and Saugus, we always love the calls. Thank you very much. I wish we could chat longer, but we have the call lines stacking up. Taylor, before I do this read and get back to the call lines, anything you want to comment on? What do you think about the Isaiah better than Russell Westbrook? I'm gonna go ahead and say yes, just because you know I'm a Celtics. I'm an admitted Celtics homer. I love the Boston Celtics. I love Isaiah Thomas. I love Kyrie too. It's not a comparison for me at all. It's one season, and now it's the next season. I know the tendency is to compare, and I'm sure we're going to have a couple of callers on the line after I do this read that are going to, you know, want to compare the two. But I love Isaiah Thomas, and I think what he did last year with the Boston Celtics was more impressive than what Russell Westbrook did, even given the triple-double stats, because if you actually look into those triple-double stats, a lot of those rebounds were because his other teammates were clearing out in order to get him those rebounds, in order to allow him to get those. He wasn't boxing out and scrapping and fighting for those rebounds. He was coasting in and getting those rebounds. And I think a lot of those assists were empty assists in the way that Rajon Rondo's assist streak had a lot of empty assists where he gave up some good shots, better shots, you know, shots that he should have taken in order to get, you know, get the teammate, you know, wide open layups or whatever in order to get an assist, to pass the ball to a teammate and get an assist. So I'm not quite as impressed. What do you think, Taylor? You think that's a valid take, or you think Vinny and Saugus is just giving us the super hot Cheetos takes like some of our other callers have been prone to do?
Westbrook. Only one person had ever averaged a triple-double in this season before Russell Westbrook did that, and he had more triple-doubles in this season than Oscar Robertson. I'd say that Russell Westbrook had one of the most impressive seasons ever, so I'm going to go with Russ over IT. Sorry, IT.
All right, and I know we have some callers that are waiting on the line. Isaiah in Jersey, I see you. Tyree, I think that's you. It's a Washington area code, so we're going to get to you, Tyree, as well. We just got to pay some bills first before we go back to these call-ins and jump on these super hot takes to Russell Westbrook versus Isaiah Thomas, to maybe Russell Westbrook versus Kyrie Irving, since he is our current point guard right now. Just want to remind everybody to go check out the brand new CLNSmedia.com website launching. Finally, CLNSmedia.com is no longer CLNS Radio, it's CLNS Media, because Nick Gelso, Larry H. Russell, and the other founders and members of CLNS Media have been working hard to expand their reach to not just podcasts and not just radio or terrestrial radio, but to all media, and not just basketball and Boston Celtics, but to other sports as well. So I want to make sure everybody checks out clnsmedia.com, the brand new clnsmedia.com. And as always, this episode is sponsored by Greats, the makers of the all-time great sneakers, classic, stylish, and comfortable shoes sold at a great price. Greats is Brooklyn's first sneaker company ever, the first ever sneaker company to be founded in Brooklyn, New York. They sell all the Greats classic styles, made the best for less, high-quality material, but not at the high-end price. Wide selection of both men's and women's shoes, versatile style suitable for any occasion, tons of different colors and materials to choose from. Their best sellers include the all-leather Royale Lace-Up, and my favorite, because I'm too lazy to tie my own shoes, the Wooster slip-on. Gotta love them slip-ons. Just put them on and go. Can even play basketball in them. If you're a real baller, you can play basketball in anything, even if they don't got shoelaces. Just throw on some slides, throw on some Royale lace-ups, or throw on some Wooster slip-ons and just hit the courts. You can check these styles out along with lots of other great styles at Greats.com. That's GREATS.com. And we've got a special deal for all of our audience members that call in and listen and share their opinions and their hot takes with us after every single Boston Celtics game and every single CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. We've got a special deal for you guys. Save 15% on your first order with our offer code, all one word, Celtics Roundtable. Should know how to spell Celtics. Should know how to spell round. Should know how to spell table, because you eat at it every day. Unless you're a savage animal, you just eat on your couch like I do. But that's okay. Celtics round table. Get 15% off your first order at greats.com. Once again, that's GREATS.com. Be sure to enter in Celtics round table to save 15% at checkout. Greats also believe so much in their shoes, they offer a no-risk return and exchange policy to guarantee that you get the right fit and style that you love. If you order the shoes and for any reason you don't love them, Greats believe so much in their product that they guarantee that you will love your shoes or you get your money back. That's Greats.com, and use our code Celtics Roundtable and save 15% off your first order just for listening to CLNS Media. We thank Greats once again for sponsoring this podcast. Without Greats and sponsors like them and fans like you who patronize our sponsors, this podcast wouldn't be happening. This podcast is now running, I believe, six, seven straight now. And with that, we're going to go to our next caller. A very frequent caller calls in after almost every single Boston Celtics game, always comes with the super insight and wisdom, so much so that I like to give him his own intro music. Isaiah in Jersey. What's up, Isaiah? I know you're not dead wrong. You're going to give us something dead right today. What's up, Isaiah?
What's going on, fellas? How's everything? Nice to talk to you all after another Celtic win. It's like ho-hum. Here we go again. Another win.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, first of all, great game tonight by all the guys. Great defensive game by the guys. Way to pick apart that Bucks defense. They seemed like, you know, they seemed like trees out there. I don't know. Looking at them, they were all long and athletic. They were a really good young team that all they need is some shooters in order to, or if some of those guys can turn into shooters like Snell. I think he should get a little bit more, you know, run for them. He's come a long way since he was in Chicago. He's come a long way. And I think guys like Thon Maker, it's what, Maker's first or second year this year?
Second.
Yeah, second. It's his second year. I mean, so he's got a long ways to go. He's only had 1 year of high school. He just started playing basketball a little while ago. He's really athletic. He has a good shot. He just has to learn his range, know where he's going to shoot. And not only that, learn the offense a little better, you know, get a little stronger. They're going to be a team that's going to, that we're still going to have to reckon with, especially since Jabari Parker is going to be coming back. And depending on what kind of shape he comes back in, he may provide that offensive punch that they need and that floor spacing that they need also. And also, he's a 6'10 matchup problem. So And Bledsoe's still trying to get acclimated with what they're trying to do over there. So I wouldn't be too harsh on Jason
point.
Kidd. Yeah, I wouldn't
I forgot
be too
about
harsh
Jabari
on Jason
Parker.
Kidd.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too harsh on Jason Kidd just yet. I want to see what they do as the season goes along because Giannis is a monster. Like, he's your nightmare. Every basketball player must wake up in the middle of the night sweating, thinking about Giannis, especially when you got him on the second night of a back-to-back. Could you imagine him coming at you? He's all elbows and knees, and that one play where Tommy referred to him as that was a wilt lay-in. I mean, he is long. He's dunking on everyone. So I wouldn't count them out yet, but the team that I think that the Suns is going to have the biggest problem with moving forward is going to be Detroit. Detroit, and of course Cleveland, but Detroit is a matchup problem. Everyone that watches basketball knows that it's a game of matchups. And although you may have a good record, and when you get into the playoffs, if you have holes and you go up against the wrong team, they're going to exploit it. And Detroit is a team that is going to exploit all weaknesses, and they also have Kyrie's kryptonite, Avery Bradley.
Yeah,
I think that's the reason why the Celtics lost that game. It wasn't because of Drummond was great. He's a presence. But the problem was Avery was guarding the heck out of Kyrie. That's the first time I saw all season where Kyrie wasn't Kyrie. And if that continues when we play them and the way Tobias Harris came out with no fear of anyone and the way Drummond can dominate and make Al look small, that's a team that I think moving forward, especially if they continue to play well and get confidence, that we're going to have a hard time with moving forward. So with that being said, I think I got a solution. I would love to find a way to get a young guy like what's his name from Philly?
Jahlil
Okafor.
Exactly. I would love to find a way to get Okafor just for a Detroit series, just to exploit matchups, and not to mention the guy can score. If he can't do anything else, he came into the league averaging 17 points a game, almost 18 points a game.
Yep.
I think that that's something that Brad, as genius as he is, I think the professor could find a way to use him. What do you guys think?
Jahlil Okafor has been a bad NBA player. There's no two ways about it. You know, he's been bad. I think they're going to wait to do anything. The buyout market has, you know, started up because they have the $8.3 million player exception as a result of the Gordon Hayward. I don't think they're going to flip any picks or any players for Okafor, but if he gets bought out, I wouldn't be surprised if Ainge takes a look at him.
I don't think you could say he's been a bad player. I think this year he hasn't played very much. Obviously, he's played in two games. There's a situation in Philly where he wants out. He's not there. But, I mean, if you take his previous two seasons, like Isaiah just mentioned, he came into the league averaging over 17 points a game and 7 rebounds. And this is with a team that, you know, was stacked with big men.
Leadership.
That had big men, you know, all over the place. And then his next season, you know, as his minutes declined, he went from 30 minutes his rookie season in 2015-16, playing 30 minutes a game, down to just under 23 minutes a game. And he still averaged 12 points and 5 boards in those 22 minutes a game in his second season. This year, I believe he's I don't even think he has an injury. I think
he
hasn't
played.
Because he's, yeah, he
doesn't, there's
no room for
him.
There's and I think that one last thing before I let you guys get back to debating Jahlil Okafor, because clearly Isaiah and I agree on this one, and Taylor doesn't seem to be quite as sold on Jahlil Okafor. I think you get an immediate kind of camaraderie with Jahlil Okafor Kyrie Irving and
Kyrie,
Jason Tatum, the fact that they all went to Duke. You get those Duke boys out there, they have that camaraderie. It kind of eases the flow in that chemistry. Not that, you know, it helps Jahlil understand Brad Stevens' system, but I think that it, you know, when you have that kind of connection, you're an alumnus of the same team as the star on the team and as the you know, star draft pick, kind of bring him in. And I think, just as Isaiah said, he lives down low on the block. He can score on the block. He can grab you a few rebounds. He's not a fantastic rebounder for a 7-footer, but he can get you some stats, and he can help exploit those matchups, if for nothing else than those games where you need somebody that can cause defenses to collapse and get your perimeter offense open.
I can't necessarily say he's a bad player. This is his third year. He hasn't played this year. And in his second year, they didn't really have room for him last year. So if you look at the three seasons that he had, and it's really two, you can't say, so what, 17-5, 17-6 is a bad NBA career at all.
No, well, those are just two numbers, though. And I'm not saying he's a bad – I'm not saying he is a bad player. I'm saying he's been a bad player. His defensive – his, you know, for his entire career, his defensive box plus minus is negative 0.8. Is that he's got two defensive win shares for his entire career.
But I'm not getting
Celtics
him for his defense.
I understand that, but
defense. And I would
understand that, but he would be spelling Baines. He'd be spelling Tice. And the reason Baines and Tice work so well in this system is because they rim run and play defense. You're not going to get that from Okafor. I'm not saying they shouldn't look at him, because if the guy can get buckets, I want him on my team. I like offense more than defense. But I don't know how well he'd fit here, and I don't know if they're willing to move anything for him. We'll have to wait and see.
If he could, if
he's a,
he could,
he's a career 0.04 of a percent win share player. So he's actually a career positive. He hasn't averaged a negative win share. Actually, I'm looking at win shares for 48 minutes. His,
no,
his
yeah,
win
I'm,
shares
yeah.
in general. His win shares in
right.
general. He's zero this season. He was 1.2 in his first two seasons. So he's not a negative win share. Now his value over replacement. He's a negative in that category, but I mean, it, overall, throughout you know, throughout his the career, minus this season, because I'm not going to hold the season against him given the circumstances. I don't think that he's a negative player, but he's going to be. Listen, Brad Stevens makes almost all of these players better. He puts them in situations to succeed, and I think you're going to get a little bit more out of Jahlil than you would, you know what I'm saying, in Philly, just given the fact that Brad Stevens knows how to use these guys, even if it's only in a utility role for a certain specific purpose in a certain specific matchup. I think Jahlil would probably work for the Boston Celtics. He adds a component that the Boston Celtics don't really have right now, and that's a player that lives down low on the post that can score, you know, close to the basket with his back to the basket and do that. Al Horford can do it. He just doesn't like to do it as a, you know, consistent thing. He prefers to play that stretch for more on the perimeter. But, you know, is he the difference between the championship or not? No, but I think he'd be a nice addition to the team.
I'd rather wait for Nerlens Noel to get a buyout.
That may happen. But I personally, like I said, I think that Nerlens Noel, whose spot is he going to take? Is he going to play in the crunch, in crunch time? Like,
no,
you're still
going to
have
so.
Al out there. So the problem that the Celtics have is the second unit can't score consistently on a regular basis. That's why he keeps sprinkling the starters in with the second unit in order to ease the pain and try to get the second unit to go. But if you can add a guy who can score on the box and take the burden off of other guys like Morris, who feels like he has to score every time he touches the ball, or Marcus. You guys complain about Marcus and how he takes too many shots. These guys are shooting like this because there's no offense on the second unit that's consistent. So if you take the number, what, two or three pick in the draft coming out of Duke, I think it was mentioned that he's already played with the – it's that camaraderie he has with the fellow Dukies that he has on the team.
I think before Semi transferred to SMU, he was at Duke.
Exactly. So I really think I really think the kid has had a bad rap, because even Philly was a wreck. Like, you can't expect him. He kind of flourished amongst all that chaos in Philly with everything that's going on. They ruined two top five big men with Nerlens Noel. And again with Embiid, so I'm not Embiid. Okafor. So I'm not really convinced that they know what they're doing over there with big man. It just so happens that Embiid is just a beast, and they lucked up on a really good guy. So I'm not going to hold that against the kid. And he's only been in the league in 3 years. Give him to Brad. Brad is like King Midas. Everything he touches turns to gold. And I'm sure he can figure out a way to ease this kid in with the second unit and take the burden off of other guys, so that they can play their roles and we can actually give the starters some rest, even more rest than they're getting.
Maybe. If it works, it works. I'd love it if it did.
Isaiah, we still got some callers on the line, but I think you might want to stay on the line just in case this caller has some, you know, some words. I know that you guys have been going back and forth, but missing each other's. You'll call one show and then he'll call the other show and then you'll call the other show, and I know that there's some issues to be addressed. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on mute right now, and then if there happens to be an opportunity for y'all two to kind of, you know, hash out the differences, we'll unmute you and we'll bring a little roundtable to close out the show. How does that sound, Isaiah?
All right. That's beautiful, so, man. My man. And just in case I don't get to tell my man Ty, I said, what's up?
For sure. You can tell him right now. Say, hey, what's up, Ty?
Hey, what's up, Ty? What's going on, brother?
Alrighty, and with that, we're going to bring, I really hope it is Ty, because I don't know who else calls from the 253, but Ty Ray, is it you? Is it really you?
What's going on?
Ty Ray!
Yes, Ty Ray from the home of Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley.
And Avery Bradley, exactly.
How's it going, guys? Great win tonight. Pretty complete, one of the best games all year. Thrilled about that. Driving home from my Christmas party, so my company Christmas party, so I thought I'd call in and also talk to you guys about some of the topics you discussed as I turned on the show. One is the player that I'd like the most smack the hell out of is Dellavedova, right? You hate Zaza. You hate Yannick. No, I would just love to get in a room with Deli and beat the shit out of him. Seriously.
You bought your leg off.
Don't ever talk about the offer that way.
I absolutely hate him.
Okay, I absolutely can't stand it. So I just thought I'd get that on the record. Number two, we're talking about MVP candidates, our top guards. How the hell we don't mention Isaiah Thomas in this conversation is beyond me. Yes, he hasn't played all year. Yes, he has a hip injury. What more can the guy do last year? 29 points a game. 53 points in the East. I get that, but we're talking about triple doubles, right? We're talking about last year with Russell, right? Come on, we're basing a lot of our choices on what people have done in the past. We're only 25 games into this year. We're only a quarter of the way into the season, roughly, right? We're a little quarter of the way into the season, so we're still basing our opinions on a lot of things that have happened in the past. For instance, Nick brought up Russell Westbrook's record for triple doubles. So Isaiah last year, 53 friggin' points in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Sister died, teeth knocked out, carrying the team on his back from a double digit deficit. One of the best performances I have ever seen in my lifetime. I don't care what goddamn sport I've ever watched. It was one of the most incredible Herculean efforts I have ever seen. So how we cannot have this man in the conversation as one of the best guards of the NBA is beyond me. What more does this guy have to do? And we act like he only did it last year. We forget about the 40-point effort in the playoffs against the Hawks the year before that, or the fact after the Celtics acquired him midway through the halfway point of the season, 2.5 years ago, the Celtics took off. Look at their goddamn record. They were 14-26 before they acquired Isaiah. Isaiah gets on the team to have a winning record, come out of nowhere, make the playoffs. Yes, they got swept by the Cavaliers, but they didn't have a business making the playoffs that year. They went 48 games the following year, and we're still questioning Isaiah. They went 53 games last year, and we're still questioning Isaiah. Enough already. The man deserves our respect. Top 10 in the league, bar none. I hope he heals and kicks some ass. Okay, on that note, I have only one more thing to say. And that is this. Last night I get in a Twitter war with James Harden people. Of all the people who want to talk smack, James fucking Harden. The man has never won a goddamn ring. He was third wheel at OKC. He choked last year in the semis against the Spurs. Get this, guys. Get this. The guys trolling me send me a screenshot of friggin' Hakeem Olajuwon, and they tell me to get out of a time machine because we've won 17 titles. I'm like, time machine? We're listening to Kitten play. This is 2017. they want to use Hakeem Olajuwon as somehow, the fact that that's a superior franchise to what the Celtics have now. I couldn't believe it. Anyway.
Hakeem Olajuwon is an extremely talented player. I think he's underappreciated for what he could do and what he was. I mean, he was fantastic as a center with his footwork, with the moves that he had. He could shake anybody with his moves, with the patented dream shake. But listen, the Houston Rockets haven't won a championship since the 90s. The one criticism that Laker fans give for the Boston Celtics is, y'all won 17 championships, but how many of them were since you've been alive, or how many of them were in the past, decade or in this century? The Boston Celtics won in 2008, and my retort to those Lakers fans, just by the way, is how many of those championships did the Lakers win in Los Angeles? Because we celebrate championships that the Boston Celtics won in Boston.
So, But it gets even better, guys. This conversation got even better last night. If you go to my Twitter thread, you could probably read it. So this guy comes at me with, well, you only had one black player on your team, and you won all those titles with several African-American athletes. I'm like, are you freaking out of your mind? If you're going to Casey Jones or Zach Sanders or, you know, Sam
Dennis
Jones.
Johnson?
I mean, the ignorance, Dennis, the ignorance level on NBA fans just drives me up the wall. And so that's why I get real emotional about Isaiah, because Isaiah represents so much more than just scoring and his play on the court. It's what he brought the city. It's what he brought the franchise to a feeling of greatness back. I'm not living in the past, but this team right now is living off that legacy that IT helped create. That's all
what
I'm saying. I'm not saying he's better than Kyrie or anything else.
I don't know if they're living off the legacy that IT built. There's only four guys back from that team.
I think so, because I don't think Kyrie Irving's coming to the Celtics if they didn't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, right?
Okay.
I don't think Gordon Hayward is coming to the Celtics if they hadn't won 53 games.
I think the point that Ty Ray is making is that
Boston
has never been irrelevant. I mean, basketball has never been irrelevant in Boston, but there were some very lean years, and just, you know, a year or two before Isaiah Thomas came to Boston wearing green, Jordan Crawford was the Celtics point guard, okay?
Right.
So Isaiah Thomas, I mean, I have to agree with that point in the legacy, in that Isaiah Thomas made the Boston Celtics a place that players wanted to come. I don't think Al Horford would be wearing a green jersey right now if it weren't for Isaiah Thomas making the Boston Celtics a relevant team in 2000 and whatever year that he got here. I don't think Gordon Hayward, I mean, maybe, you know, but I think that Isaiah Thomas had a significant role in bringing Gordon Hayward to the Boston Celtics.
That's documented. I agree. I misunderstood the point he was trying to make. That is this miscommunication?
No. I mean, as a Celtics fan of 40 years, they've been always relevant to me. What I'm talking about is getting nationally televised.
Gotcha.
You know, not that that's the end all be all, but getting on the cover of, you know, magazines and being fun. I can't tell you, walking around Tacoma, how cool it was last year to see people with a number 4 jersey on in freaking Tacoma, Washington. It was everywhere. You know, all these little kids. And, you know, it was really cool. And I hope, honestly, guys, I'm not a Cavs fan. You guys know I hate the Cavs, but I love IT. But I actually hope I see the same love for him when he gets healthy around my city, because he does so much for my town. But anyway, I just thought you guys would get a kick out of it. I really didn't really want to talk about IT, but I thought you'd really get a kick out of just this Twitter war I had with this Rockets fan who was trying to tell me how much better Harden was than Kyrie Irving. And I'm like, out of your friggin' mind? Are you out of your mind?
I don't
know.
Kyrie has been one of my top 5 favorite basketball players since he was at Duke. But last year, James Harden scored 2,000 points and assisted on 2,000 points. That guy is incredible. I'm not saying he's so much better than Kyrie, but he is better. I'll give him that any day of the week.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I got to tell you guys, if I had one guy with the ball in the final minute of the game or 30 seconds or whatever, it's going to be Kyrie Irving every time. Every time.
Oh, same here. I'm just saying, like, a lot of people like to give James Harden a lot of shit, but, like, that guy is an incredible basketball player.
Don't disagree with you. Don't disagree with you, you know? You know, $10 million player with a 10-cent hat, I think. So, you know what I mean? But people try to tell me that the Rockets are more relevant than the Celtics on Twitter. I'm like, are you out of your mind? You know, give me a break.
That's Twitter. I know you like to give me shit because some of the members of my nearly 50,000 member Boston Celtics Facebook group are complete potatoes. But I mean, you know, but there's ignorance everywhere. That's what the internet is basically for, is people saying some ignorant stuff that they would never say, you know, elsewhere. They go on Twitter and they'll tweet some ignorant stuff. I mean, we can see the caliber of tweeting, not to go in that direction, but we see who's tweeting and what they're tweeting about. People say some really dumb shit on Twitter. It happens. People say some dumb shit on Facebook as well. That's what the internet does. It empowers people to say some dumb stuff that they wouldn't really say otherwise. And I think that the debate about James Harden and Kyrie Irving is a fantastic debate to have. And the fact that, you know, Kyrie Irving is up there being mentioned along with James Harden, being mentioned along with Russell Westbrook. But out of all those guys, who's the only one that has a ring? And I know that ring was won largely by LeBron James, but who took that last shot? Who's the one that took that last shot?
Right. Yeah, I mean.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. So, in conclusion with my argument on Twitter, I said, who has the ring? And then the guy goes, well, you know you've lost the debate if you have to bring up rings. I'm like, how stupid is that? Right? I mean, come on.
What's the point of playing?
I mean,
that's the whole point of playing,
you know,
is winning a ring.
It's just, it didn't make any sense at all. You know, just made zero sense. So I just like, okay, you know, come playoff time, give me a call because I know Kyrie's going to be there and the Rockets are not winning the NBA Finals. I don't give a damn, you know, right now that they're right behind the Celtics as far as overall standings. They're not going to be there.
No, December 28th, they play in primetime, so that'll be interesting. The Celtics and Rockets.
I can't wait. No, I can't. The Celtics should have lost the beating the Rockets on the road last year if, you know, Al didn't miss that bunny at the horn, which I still shake my head over. Remember that layup Al missed, horn?
Yep.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it was a tough loss to take. But I really like this team a lot. And I just thought I'd give you guys a call and share my Twitter experience. I'm 51. I shouldn't get this fired up over stuff like I'm going to get a heart attack.
Oh, hell yeah. Keep you young. Ty, what's your Twitter handle? I got to go follow you. I'm Taylor McCloud,
by the way. It's Taylor. Nice to meet you. It's Coug88. C-O-U-G-88.
All right. I'll have to give you a follow.
If you're wondering.
Riot.
And it's not because he's a cougar. It's not because he's a sexy old man, which he is. He's a very sexy old man.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you don't get me for sexual harassment, Ty Ray. But it's because he went to Washington State, the Washington State Cougars. So he's a Washington State alum. Therefore,
big Mike Leach guy, huh?
Yep.
Yep. Absolutely. Home of Aaron Dames, baby. That's where he played his college ball.
Yeah, Clay Thompson.
Yep.
Klay Thompson, yep, he's the man. He comes back every once in a while to Pullman to root on the football team. Going to the Holiday Bowl. Kind of disappointing, but we're going to the Holiday Bowl.
Hey, well,
anyway.
Syracuse, where I go, is not going to any bowl, so.
What's going on there, man? Bring back Donovan McNabb. That's when you guys were good.
I don't know. It's tough. They got no defense, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we'll try to do a Syracuse show, Syracuse post-game show.
That's pretty much every post-game show on CLNS Media because Bobby Manning has brought all the Syracuse gang over to the CLNS Media post-game shows.
There's three of us now.
Yep.
Man, great broadcasting school, guys, though.
Absolutely.
Mass props and respect for you guys at Syracuse. In my TV career, I worked with a lot of Syracuse guys, and, of course, you know what, Tirico comes from there and Costas, and I know I'm missing probably quite a few, but – my alma mater, Keith Jackson was, you know, Keith Jackson and Edward R. Murrow were kings from my school. But that's well before your time. So,
anyway, guys,
a lot of fun as always. Nick, I mean, we need to host our own show. I just don't know when, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I just got the schedule, I think, yesterday from Bobby Manning. I'm not sure if we work together or not, but... You know, hopefully someday we get to do the co-host. I'm sure something will happen where the pieces, you know, fall where they fall. Somebody, you know, calls off or can't make it, and I always happen to be here. You know what I'm saying? So we'll get a show together.
You're
it's always fun working with you and hearing your take.
Didn't you host like a show by yourself last year? Like it was Christmas.
Yeah, the Christmas show. Yeah.
Yeah, they played like the Knicks or something, didn't you? Yeah, I was nuts, man. I haven't even done that. Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, man. Take care, guys.
All right, have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Ty.
You too. Bye-bye.
But there goes Ty Ray, a longtime CLNS Media contributor, with some more hot takes, getting us all fired up about Isaiah Thomas and comparisons. Now we've had a take from Vinny and Saugus comparing Westbrook to Isaiah Thomas. And then now we have Ty Ray comparing Isaiah Thomas and James Harden. So, I mean,
a lot
of love for Isaiah Thomas still in amongst Boston fans. What do you think, Taylor?
I mean, I loved IT and what he did, but Kyrie, like I said, he's been one of my favorite players since, you know, he was at Duke. So it's not every day one of your favorite players gets traded to your favorite team. So I love LeBron, so I watched a ton of Cavs basketball for a long time. So I'm always going to like lean towards Kyrie just because he's been my guy for longer than Isaiah. But what Isaiah did for the city of Boston and just the Celtics basketball in general can't be understated.
No, definitely not. I'm just wondering, kind of like in the back of my mind, how are you a Syracuse student and you love Duke basketball? Aren't they now ACC rivals?
No, I don't love Duke basketball. I hate Duke basketball. I like Kyrie.
Okay, there you go. That makes more sense. I like that better. I don't like Duke basketball either, but you know, I'm a fan of Kyrie. Definitely a fan of Kyrie. Yeah. I like those handles. I like seeing the hesitation, the crossovers, those, you know, that type of move. I think Kyrie is, you know, the heir apparent to the Allen Iverson style of, you know, basketball and handling. That's been one of the big conversations in between games that I've seen online lately, and not just lately, but you know, for the past couple of years now, is Kyrie Irving and Allen Iverson. Comparison.
Well, yeah,
to the
Kevin,
handle.
This summer on Bill Simmons' podcast, Kevin Durant said that Kyrie had a better handle than AI, and that, you know, set off a goddamn fire on Twitter. So,
well, you know, Allen Iverson is an icon. He's a cult hero. I mean, whether or not Kyrie actually has better handles or not, I mean, it's up for debate, but I wouldn't want to have to, you know, be the devil's advocate in defend Kyrie on that, because you're just not going to win given the, you know, the cult status that Allen Iverson has. I mean, Allen Iverson is like, you know, for all those players from the 90s, you know, Tracy McGrady, you know, all those guys that, you know, were fantastic players, Grant Hill, that just never really got their rings because of injury, because of whatever reason. Allen Iverson is that one player, I think, In maybe all of NBA basketball history, at least for, you know, for my generation and generations, you know, around mine, he's that one player that ring conversation doesn't matter, because Allen Iverson, what he did, you know what I'm saying, in revolutionizing the game of basketball, he didn't need a ring to be, you know what I'm saying, the icon that he is. He's a cultural icon. He's not just a basketball icon. Allen Iverson is a cultural icon. He brought back, you know, cornrows to, you know, the masses. You know what I'm saying? He brought that.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah, for sure.
Everything Allen Iverson got, you know, so much credit. I mean, who was buying Reeboks? You know what I'm saying? Until the questions came out, you know what I mean? The answer, whatever the name of his shoes were. I mean, Allen Iverson transformed the entire game. If you look back at the late 90s and early 2000s, the late 90s, there were two players that transformed the game, you know, forever. And one was Shaq, and the other was Allen Iverson. Because Shaq was unstoppable, and they had to create rules to make the games competitive, because Shaq was just eating everybody up, you know, down in the little block. And then Allen Iverson, they had to make rules to, you know, not only just because of the way he handled the basketball, you know, with hand checks, and then you have, you know, is that a carry, is that not a carry, the way he held onto the ball. But the NBA with David Stern also changed the rules of what players were allowed to wear in the post-game press conferences, specifically because of Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson changed not just basketball, but actually changed our culture in a lot of ways, if you really think about it. And that's been written about a lot, but I think a lot more can be written about as well. But that's all I'm going to say about Allen Iverson. He's not a Boston Celtic. I love Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving, you know, Allen Iverson, great player in history. Kyrie Irving is a great player right now. But anyways, we're gonna finish the show out. Once again, the Boston Celtics win 111-110 over the Milwaukee Bucks for their 21st win, league best 21st win of the season. Kyrie Irving scored, what was it? How many points did Kyrie Irving have tonight? I don't have the box score in front of me.
32
points. That's Taylor McLeod coming through. 32 points from Kyrie Irving, and fantastic game. Another Al Horford game, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists. All over, and Jason Tatum, can't forget Jason Tatum, 17 points and 6 boards, on fire early from deep, shooting 4-for-4 from 3 in the first quarter, all overcoming a fantastic game that you come to expect from Giannis Antetokounmpo with 40 points and 9 rebounds. Anything else you'd like to add before we shut this thing down, Taylor?
Giannis Antetokounmpo can't shoot a basketball!
There you go. He can't shoot the bat. He sure can dunk, though. He's sure athletic, and he's sure fun to watch.
That's cool.
Wouldn't
so
mind
no
having
him
on the Boston Celtics, but, you know, those 4 years of Kelly Olynyk were sure fun, weren't they? I don't know if people ever let Danny Ainge live that one down. They could have had Giannis Antetokounmpo, but Kelly Olynyk was fun while he lasted.
Yeah, for sure.
For for sure. That said, once again, it's always a pleasure, Taylor McLeod, to co-host the post-game show with you. I know we ran a little bit long. We got some great callers in. Isaiah from Jersey, big shout-out to Isaiah. Big shout-out to Vinny and Saugus. Also, big shout-out, of course, to our man Ty Ray out there in Tacoma, Washington, always representing the Tacoma boys with all the passion. And once again, we want to urge everybody to check out the brand-new and improved CLNSmedia.com. CLNSmedia.com launching the brand new website. Big shout outs, of course, to Nick Gelso, the founder and the big boss man of CLNS Media. I want to give a thank you to Larry H. Russell, another big name in the CLNS Media Group, as well as Bobby Manning, the new manager, let's call him, the new manager, the new head guy for the Boston, for the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show, putting in hard work, scheduling all the hosts, bringing in new hosts, and making the schedule work, and getting guys like me and guys like you, Taylor, here after every single game to break down the game and break down the scores and take calls from our avid listeners and avid readers. And once again, we'd just like to remind everybody that this post-game show, as always, is sponsored by Greats.com, makers of the all-time Greats classic stylish and comfortable sneakers at a great price. Make sure to check them out. Get 15% off on your first order with our offer code of Celtics Roundtable at Greats.com. We'll be back again Wednesday night, same time, same place. After the Boston Celtics take on the Dallas Mavericks at home at TD Garden, your host will be Sam Sheehan, the man with all the analysis and salary cap knowledge, and John Duke, one of the OG Boston Celtics podcasters. I think he might be one of the OG podcasters, period. And with that, we'd just like to say good night. I'm your host, Nick Sesento, for my co-host, Taylor McLeod. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.
There had never been a sneaker brand founded in Brooklyn, which was really surprising. Like, everything came from here at one point, but never a sneaker company. So here we are. For value and quality, and we're able to offer a premium quality product at a value price by not wholesaling. It was becoming really clear that like the model of traditional wholesale was completely broken, and basically because of the inefficiency, like the customer pays more money than they need to. So we have two categories, made in Italy and made in Asia. And made in Asia is more sporty, younger, more accessibly priced. And made in Italy is more luxury, we call it accessible aspiration. We use the same factories, the same material providers, the same sole providers as all the luxury brands do. There's one region in Italy where most of the luxury sneakers are made. We make it in that area. This shoe, the upper is premium Italian leather. I mean, it comes from some of the best suppliers in the country. And then we line it with what is called vicheta calf. And vicheta calf is what like Chanel makes their bags out of. So actually the lining is more expensive than the leather, which is crazy. And when we went to the factories and we're like, oh, we want to line the whole thing in vicheta calf, they're like, what? That's kind of what luxury brands do. And we're like, yeah, we know. And they were like, yeah, but you want to price it at this. And I'm like, yeah, but this is how we're going to do it. I know if we cut these things in half, like every other one of our competitors that sells it for $500 is gonna basically have the exact same level of material, except this one's gonna be $200. And like the simplicity of that sounds like that can't be, that can't be, that can't be, because we're so told like, oh, the more you pay, the better it is. And like that may have been true at some point, but today it's not. And this is kind of proof of that. I mean, there's pros and cons to doing things the way we do it. The pros are we get to give you guys a better product for less. The cons are, you know, it's hard to get more people aware of your brand when you're just one website. By not selling to a retailer, we literally are saving you at least half. Our business couldn't exist pre-internet. Like, the internet is a distribution channel. Like, you can make things and sell it. And if you do that, and that's the majority of your business, and you're not relying on third-party retailers, then you can have a super disruptive business, whatever you're selling. So the internet is the reason. All of those things, man, have changed the world and allow greats to be greats.
This is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.